Welcome to Book City Roanoke. I'm Douglas Jackson, and I'm happy today to be speaking with clergy, writer, and justice advocate Joe Cobb, who also happens to be the vice mayor of the city of Roanoke. But before we start the conversation, I want to tell you a few things. Importantly, Book City Roanoke is a lab for the exploration of engagement and equity at the intersection of books and place. Explore our things literary at bookcityroanoke.com. Also very important, we have a founding sponsor, Book No Further, Roanoke's independent bookstore, putting ideas in your head since 2017, down on the Roanoke City Market at 112 Market Street. This season, we're taking a look at identity and action, how the written word helps us shape our understanding of ourselves, and then helps us put that into action in the world around us. We asked our guest, Joe Cobb, to bring in a few titles related to just that topic. And we'll have links to the books and more posted at bookcityroanoke.com. Joe Cobb is a co-author with Leanne Taylor of Our Family Outing, a memoir of coming out and coming through, which was self-published in 2011. He's just marked 1 year of service on the Roanoke City Council, and he has served in the past as pastor of Metropolitan Community Church of the Blue Ridge. Currently, he's a chaplain for Hermitage Roanoke, and the outreach coordinator for Highland Park Elementary School. Joe, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Doug. It's good to be here.
Well, I was looking forward to talking to you about books. And the first question, I think, is what gave you your love of books?
It probably started as a child with my parents reading to me. I think the first book they read to me was my baby book, which was a unique baby book because I was one of four adopted children. And so the book was especially designed for adopted children, telling the story of how my parents adopted me. And then just, you know, continuing to unfold that. And then the second book, because my parents were people of faith and were part of the United Methodist tradition, was a Bible storybook called The Bible in Pictures for Little Eyes. And it was an interesting book because it took passages or stories from the Bible and matched them with artistic renderings that dated back probably early 1900s, I would say. Some of them may have ranged earlier than that. So you had this Bible story with questions at the end, and then you had this artistic picture of it. They would read me some of those stories, and then we'd talk about the pictures. And so that was one of my early introductions. My parents were both originally teachers, so they too were used to reading, and my mom was an elementary school teacher. So that's probably where it started for me.
That first book seems really important, literally seeing yourself in that story.
Yeah. And valuing the authenticity of the story. I think as an adopted child, I have heard far too many stories of adopted children who didn't know they were adopted, like it was a big secret. And certainly historically, adoption has not always been seen as an ideal scenario for children. And that's changed a lot, fortunately. But it was refreshing to me to be told early on, this is your story. And my parents would always say, we love you, we chose you, you're special to us. And those themes are also biblical and sacred themes. So the intersection of those in my life has had a profound influence on shaping my identity, helping me. It was significant when I went through the process of coming out later in my adult life. And so just talking with you about this now is wonderful because it's showing me some of those threads of connection throughout my life that I hadn't really noticed before. Yeah. So bravo.
Book talk's always good. Well, what kind of books do you read typically now?
I read a lot of nonfiction. I'm reading a lot right now in terms of African American history, just trying to understand more fully the experience that African Americans and people who identify as Black, people of color, have experienced historically. I just got the new, I guess it's a year old now, biography of Frederick Douglass that I'm going to start. I also have the new Jim Crow, which came out several years ago, talking about the problem of incarceration. But I also enjoy fiction. I just finished the marvelous Gentleman in Moscow by Towles. Mm-hmm. I think it's called, pronounced Towles. Mm-hmm. A powerful story of a poet who is put on house arrest in a hotel. And the whole story is shaped around encounters that he has in the hotel because he can never leave. Mm-hmm. So I like mystery. I will confess to enjoying a good Stephen King novel. I just picked up Cemetery Road by Greg Iles. Mm-hmm. Some of Louise Penny's work. I think it's James McBride who wrote The Good Lord Bird, which is kind of historical fiction about John Brown, which I think is actually being made into a movie now. So there, it's kind of all over the place, but I like that mix. And then I like, because of my work in chaplaincy, I read a lot of books about aging and working with older adults and understanding that process of loss and transition and grieving, but also how to remain vital and engaged in life until the moment you say adios.
Yeah, I think books are an important way that I will do that or plan to do it. That Amor Towles book, The Gentleman in Moscow, there's someone in one of my book clubs who keeps recommending we read it, and he's not going to give up.
I affirm his persistence.
When he hears this, he's going to use this as documentation. And I've read half of it and need to go back and start it over again, I know, in order to finish it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, when I gave you this topic, you did not hesitate at all. We're talking about identity and action, and I asked you to maybe identify a few books that are important to you, and you responded really quickly and had passages right ready to go. So I've been looking forward to this conversation. What's the first book you want to talk about?
Well, the first book is called Reaching Out, The Three Movements of the Spiritual Life by Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen was a Catholic priest who I became acquainted with probably when I entered seminary back in the early 80s. His writing is very accessible and invitational in the sense when you pick it up, you feel like he's writing for you. He's kind of been a traveler throughout my life. And this particular book, though, is kind of an introduction to the spiritual life in three movements. And the second movement, which is about the movement from hostility to hospitality, has been an essential thread in my life. I've always believed in the power of hospitality to transform lives. And the definition that he provides, I use quite often because I think it applies to any scenario. Whether faith-based or government or hotel, anything, business. And it's this: hospitality means primarily the creation of a free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. So our work is creating that space. It's not convincing someone else. It's not forcing someone else to be someone they're not or to automatically agree with our ideas or perceptions or beliefs, but to create a space. And I think the key word here is a free space where people don't feel coerced. They don't feel pressured, but it's like creating a space like this where you can have a conversation, an authentic conversation about what you think, what you believe, a sharing of ideas. And it's in the midst of that series of conversations where you create a relationship. And out of that relationship, you learn how to listen to one another, how to share ideas, how to ask questions. And before you know it, you may have moved from a place of hostility where there were deep dividing lines and disparate ideas to a place of solidarity. And in the midst of that, likely the two people or the group of people will still have very diverse ideas, but the way in which they approach each other changes and shifts. And I think it's a timeless message and one that's really critical for our day today. Mm-hmm. In a polarized world where everything is someone taking sides, hospitality is not about that. It's just, it takes that off the table and it says, let's sit here together and meet each other and learn about each other and from each other and see where we go.
How's that invitation made?
I think it's as simple as, can we spend some time together? Can I hear more about what has formed you? What has inspired you or led you to this place in your life? What are the threads in your life that when woven together are you, and how can you express those to me? So it's really kind of a form of open-ended questions of that don't, again, put a person in a corner, but are very invitational in the sense of, I want to know more about you and what makes you you. And how you approach life, how you approach decisions, how you approach relationship. And then hopefully in this conversation, I can share some of who I am. Mm-hmm. So there's a real ebb and flow to it.
Yeah, a real conversation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think prevents us from making that invitation and making that time?
I think a lot of it is fear, a fear of the other, fear that what divides us is insurmountable, that it permanently separates us. But that's a human creation. It's a mechanism by which we try and control each other. I think sometimes we're afraid that what the other thinks or believes will be intimidating. So I think it's fear, isolation, intimidation, and all of those are very real experiences in our world and in our lives. And so I think it takes some courage, especially I think it takes courage to invite someone with whom we may find at the opposite end of the spectrum of where we are. But I think the key is finding what the points of connection are. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have a point of connection. I've always been someone who looks for the good in someone and tries to hone in on that and talk about that. And sometimes I have to confess it's a long journey of discovery in some cases, but I think that's true of anything. Sometimes we close ourselves off to what is present in someone else because of our own, the lenses through which we look. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think we have to have, it's almost like cataract surgery. We have to have those cataracts removed so that we can see ourselves and see the person in front of us more clearly.
I can catch myself doing it. It's tough to look at yourself that honestly and say, why am I shut off to this experience and this person and this other human? mm-hmm. know, this humanity.
And I'd say the flip side of that too is how have we experienced in our own lives hospitality? How have we experienced this kind of open, free space where we can be who we are? And if someone has only experienced hostility in their lives, then it's much harder for them to make that leap to creating a free space mm-hmm. for someone else to enter. Yeah. So you can look at it from a lot of different angles.
Terrific. And it's a lot easier to take a positive model and pass it on mm-hmm. Once you've experienced it and felt that, really.
Yeah.
So that's the first book. Henry Nouwen's Reaching Out, The Three Movements of the Spiritual Life. And let me tell you that I'm Douglas Jackson, and you're in Book City, Roanoke. We're speaking with the City of Roanoke Vice Mayor Joe Cobb about books that have helped shape his understanding of identity and how we can put ourselves into action in the world around us. These are books that you just might order through Book No Further, Roanoke's independent bookstore. Stop in to peruse the well-curated assemblage of new and gently used books and engage in a little good old-fashioned book talk right down on Roanoke's historic market. And so let's talk about the second book now. What else do you have for us?
Well, the second one is a book I had on my shelf for a long time before I picked it up to read it. I think I was partly afraid of how intense it would be. But it's written by Toni Morrison. It's called Beloved. It's one of her classics, and it's really about the history and impact of slavery that continues to be very real. And I was reading this. I started reading this at home, and then I was on a plane, and I continued reading it, and I reached page 102, 103, and 104. And as I read, I felt this, my spirit shifted and I started to cry, and I felt like what I was reading, I was embodying, not as a slave, not as a, but as me and what I had experienced in my own life. And what I recognized was my long struggle, and this is part of my coming out process, but it was the long struggle of being defined and controlled by other people's ideas and beliefs about my body rather than claiming my own embodiment. And I think for people who experienced slavery, their bodies were not their own. The only way they could claim that was to claim that for themselves, and to cast off what other people were doing to their bodies. It's almost like an otherworldly experience. And this scene is an attempt to reclaim that power. And the scene is, there's a local preacher in the story called Baby Suggs, and she would often go into the clearing in a forest, and there was a huge flat-sided rock, and she would situate herself atop that rock. It was like her pulpit, and she would bow her head and pray silently. And then Toni Morrison writes that the company is watching her from the trees. And it says, they knew she was ready when she put her stick down. Then she shouted, let the children come. And it's this litany of let the children come, let the women come, let the men come. And so you've got all of these people coming into the clearing. It's like they're coming out of hiding. They're coming out of slavery. They're coming out of their awful situation to be who they are, where they are. And she says, here, in this here place, we flesh that weeps, laughs, flesh that dances on bare feet in grass, love it hard. And she goes through and names every part of the body. It's like it's like black preaching when you're in a service. It's that crescendo, and then the mm-hmm. day crescendo, and then the greater crescendo, and then a day crescendo. And all of this leads up to her saying in the very end, all your inside parts that they'd love, that they'd just as soon slop for hogs, you've got to love them. The dark, dark liver, love it, and the beat and beating heart, love that too. More than eyes or feet, more than lungs, they have yet to draw free air. More than your life-holding womb and your life-giving private parts, hear me now, love your heart, for this is the prize. Saying no more, she stood up then and danced with her twisted hip the rest of what her heart had to say, while the others opened their mouths and gave her the music. Long notes held until the four-part harmony was perfect enough for their deeply loved flesh. Through this litany, Toni Morrison somehow describes the entire history of slavery, but in such a powerful, liberating form that it's kind of like she's inviting people who've experienced it to take it off and throw it away and to claim what is authentically theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Their heart.
Yeah.
That power of love that is the ultimate liberating force.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who was in the early stages of coming out, I can't tell you how transformative this was. I used it when I was ordained as a clergy in the metropolitan community churches, because for the first time as a professional clergy, I was completely authentic.
Mm.
And so I wanted to share the power of this in that context. And it continues to inform who I am and what I do. And the struggle, I think, that even today we have in celebrating our bodies, truly understanding what embodiment means, and how the decisions we make impact people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a thought process. It impacts people's bodies physically, mm-hmm. and spiritually and emotionally and mentally. And to have an awareness of that as a leader, as a human being, I think is really critical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really powerful scene, and there is something universal about it. The men cry and the men dance, and mm-hmm. everyone is caught up, and they're not only inhabiting their own bodies and owning that, but they're seen. She says,
they're
look,
seen.
At, look at each
they're
other.
They're looking at each other. They're in each other's presence. And to build on what I shared from Henry Nouwen, Baby Suggs has created a free space
mm-hmm.
where strangers can become friends instead of enemies through movement.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's
terrific. Yeah, that was from Beloved by Toni Morrison, and it was published by Knopf in 1987. Let's talk about your third book. What else do you have?
The third book is a little book with a powerful message. It's called Let Your Life Speak, Listening for the Voice of Vocation by Parker Palmer. And I think I was introduced to this and have read it over and over again as I was wrestling, having left the United Methodist Church as an ordained clergy, and then wondering what was next and trying to figure that out. And I came across, this book is heavily underlined and marked, but there was a passage which combined Parker Palmer's journey and vocation with one of my other favorite writers, Frederick Buechner. And so the passage I'm going to read today is a combination of their work. Palmer says, our deepest calling is to grow into our own authentic selfhood, whether or not it conforms to some image of who we ought to be. As we do so, we will not only find the joy that every human being seeks, we will also find our path of authentic service in the world. True vocation joins self and service, as Frederick Buechner asserts when he defines vocation as the place where your deep gladness meets the world's deep need.
That's a powerful word, that ought, in that passage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think these three writers whom I was introduced to at different times in my life, I think have resonated with me because their themes are very consistent. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, living this life that we live is not about what or who we ought to be according to someone else, but who we come to know ourselves to be. And for me, how love is the guiding force in shaping that. And that love was modeled for me from a very early age, from my birth mother's decision to release me into adoption, which was an extraordinary act of love and courage and vulnerability, and for my adoptive parents to take me into their arms sight unseen. I mean, you get a description. And when they adopted me, there were no online videos or, you know, hey, take a look at this baby. Right. This could be yours. It was, you know, they were told they were going to get an 8-week-old brown-haired, brown-eyed boy. And when they saw me, I was 8 weeks old, but I had red hair and blue eyes. but, you know, at that point, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. It's about we're holding this extraordinary gift and we're going to wrap him in unconditional love. And so it was love passing me onto love. And then the journey has been the unfolding of that. Mm-hmm. And so that was the foundation. But it really inspired in me this realization and my lifelong struggle for many years to listen to that voice of love, which was around me and within me, and then to see the power of the external voices that say, well, you ought to be this, you ought to do this, you ought to think about this, and realizing that all of those oughts are interesting, but they're not ultimately me. And so I have to claim what's me.
That's well said. And that sense of hospitality and love that we can use to create a space for other people can help them in that same process.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
Then collectively, what service we do the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could talk. Actually, I think I want to take a course in these three books. And listeners can't see the shape of one of these books, which literally has come apart from the spine and is in pieces. But we'll take a picture and we'll post it on the website at bookcityroanoke.com. And I want to thank Joe Cobb for being the guest today. I really enjoyed that conversation. And I'm going to be thinking about that tonight, I'm sure, as I'm in my thoughtful spot. I would like to thank our sponsor, Book No Further, on Roanoke's Historic City Market and with a .com at the end of it. Thanks to Brad Stevens, who's providing production support as we get this thing up and running. And join us next time with our guest, Hollins University Professor Emeritus Gene Larson, a poet, novelist, essayist, and translator who just happens to have spent a career guiding college students and emerging writers. Find Our Things Literary, such as author interviews, book reviews, and an inventory of local book clubs at bookcityroanoke.com.